this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And we are having fantastic weather. Now is our time. Oh, it's cooling down and it is so beautiful here. And I want to thank again so much EHS for sending a wonderful spokesman for solar energy here the other day. I just enjoyed Ryan Grover. He was here as a guest and he's going to come back. I think we'll have him back in January when people are going to start thinking about they'll start facing their electric bills. So again, thanks to them, and just remember, if you need solar panels, just think, go EHS. So, now I get to turn to somebody who's up in, I think she's up north somewhere, and probably she has cold weather. She's not perhaps as excited as I am that it's actually was a little below 80 degrees today. But I am so happy to welcome Julia Henry to Joy on Paper. Hi, Julia.
Hello, Patsy. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Well, this is exciting. And as I was saying, you probably have a little cooler weather than we've been having.
Well, I'm right outside of Boston. And I got to tell you, New England in the fall is a very beautiful place. And today it's 70 degrees.
So we're
doing pretty well.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's, I come from northern Michigan and I still love that change of seasons. Of course, I don't like the way it changes up. And my brother just reported to me that it was 40 degrees last night, and he said, a few more degrees, I'm going to get snow. Now, most people would say, oh, that's terrible. My brother wants snow. My brother loves snow. He's a sort of a nutcase. The more, like when it gets up to like 106 inches, then he's happy. So...
Yeah, that's not me. I love fall, but I hate winter, so I always dread it a little bit. Pumpkin spice makes me sad, but I am enjoying these days.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on the program. I get such a kick out of this. I love anything to do with it. All you have to do is put the word garden in something and I will grab a book. There's two things that will make me grab a book: if it says bookstore or if it says garden, because those books will always interest me. Because I once had this most gorgeous rose garden in England, and I it was so beautiful, and I think of it every day. And now I'm in a condo. I can't garden anymore. But tell me about the entire series, and of course the new book, which is very exciting. This is it's the fourth book. It's called Wreathing.
Book, yeah.
Yeah, and it's called Wreathing Havoc. So it's the fourth book in this series of the Garden Squad. So tell us how you came out with the idea, and we'll talk about all the books, but let's talk about Wreathing Havoc, too.
Well, I love writing this series, and I loved what you just said about your memories of your rose garden, because for so many people, myself included, gardening isn't just a hobby. It's got memories, right? You get a plant from somebody, or something reminds you of somebody, or, it's a very emotional thing as well. So my series centers around a woman named Lily Jane, who at the beginning of the series is a fairly recent widow. Her husband died 2 years ago, and she just sort of fell out of life. She just was depressed and hadn't been engaging and hadn't been gardening. So when we meet her, she has reclaimed her garden. She's back in there. She's about to have a garden party. And with the help of her friends, is coming back to life, as are her gardens. And her friends also point some stuff around town. It takes place in a small town on the coast of Massachusetts. Some issues that have come up that she just hasn't been paying attention to. And red tape is getting in the way of fixing. So, around the flagpole in town, it's all weeds and there's all this red tape. So she and her friends just start guerrilla gardening around town. They go out in the middle of the night and they you know, take out the weeds and they put nice plants in and they fix things. And then, you know, as the series progresses, they start solving crimes as well. So it's a lot of fun to write because it is around, centers around Lily, who's in her mid-60s. And I really love writing a protagonist who's a little bit older, whose knees hurt when she tries to run, and, you know, who's lived a full life but has a whole other chapter in front of her that she's uncertain about. Her best friend, Tamara, and her other friends, Ernie and Delia, together they form the Garden Squad. And that they center the whole, it's about friendship and it's about community, as are the books that I write. I write what the genre, the subgenre is called cozy. And they're about, you know, characters and, of course, a good mystery, but also about meeting people and meeting them again in the next book and getting to know them over the course of a series, which is also a lot of fun to write.
Well, this series is fun. And as you said, Lily Jane is, I think she's, you know, she has a character. She's a character. And I, exactly that, it was so, I so believe in gardening. You know, when for me, some of my earliest memories are sitting with my mother and waiting for, well, we planted the tulips, and, you know, in northern Michigan, you had to wait till the snow went. And we'd go out there, and we'd wait for that first robin to come. And when we saw the robins, we knew soon, you know, it would be time to start planting the petunias and waiting for the tulips to come up. And there is nothing, it, as you said, it makes memories. And when I see, you know, people, they have wonderful houses and they the yards look nice, but I can see that they don't actually do any gardening themselves. They're missing this the feel of being, having your fingers in that dirt, and then later on, you know, down the line, seeing the flowers come up. It's magical.
It really is. You know, one of my early memories is of my grandfather. They lived in a Sears and Roebuck bungalow, and they had a back porch that had everything. You know, they hung out laundry in the winter back there, and the dryer was back there. But he would start his seedlings in old egg cartons, you know, cardboard egg cartons, and get them ready, put grow lights back there, so that he could plant his vegetable garden in the spring. And, you know, he'd also put just flowers around and different things. And it wasn't pristine or perfect, but it was him. And that's part of it. My youngest sister is also a huge gardener. And she lives in Maryland. And those winter months are really hard on her. I mean, around March, she starts planning what she's going to do, because not being able to get out there and just put her hands in the dirt and move things around or weed or prune or just, you know, love her garden. That's how she settles herself, and that's how she balances herself. And I think we're so lucky that there are people like that in the world, to, as you said, it's not about being perfect. It's about an expression of themselves, and their gardens show that expression. And I love that.
Oh, it is a great feeling. And I wish really more people would really think about it. If they have a yard and they're, you know, it looks nice, and, you know, you have somebody come and mow it and for you, and but just take even just a small area and plant something yourself. It makes a difference. And I've called one thing I can tell you, I think perhaps a lot of people might start growing things, because with the cost of food going up, you know, if you have a little garden and you're growing your own tomatoes and cucumbers and, oh, pumpkins. Oh, we used to grow our pumpkins. Oh, I loved it. It was magical for us. Anybody who has kids, if you don't grow pumpkins, you're silly, because I know we got so excited when we'd see those pumpkins. It is magical.
It really is. It really is. My mother used to have a vegetable garden, and our house was on an old chicken farm. So the soil was very rich, and it would just take over so much that she wouldn't find zucchinis until they were like 3 feet long. So we ate a lot of zucchinis. But, you know, it's that magic of going out and being able to pick your lettuce. Or, you know, I used to, in my house, I'd just put lovely white in patience where things had died, you know, over the summer. Every time something died, I'd go and get some in patience and put them in. And they last well into the fall up here. And so walking into my house, there'd be little spots of color. And it just makes you happy. I mean, it's just a lovely way of sort of connecting and, you know, smiling a little bit when you go outside.
Well, in fact, the first hardback book I bought, because, as I said, I was in northern Michigan. We were very poor. I learned to read basically from comic books because we couldn't afford books. We didn't even have those little golden books. We were that poor. But we could afford comic books, and we learned to read from comic books. And the only real printed material we had come to the house were the Nat Geo books. My father loved those Nat Geo, we just love those magazines. So that combination, but I remember so clearly the first hardback book I bought. It is a book called Elizabeth and Her German Garden. And it's this very tiny book, and I found it, and it cost me 25 cents because it was on a table that, you know, discards. And I got it for 25 cents. It is a book that I have carried with me all over the world. Wherever I've traveled, wherever I've been, that book has been with me because I can open it up and I read about, it describes all the different types of roses and trees and flowers, and I just love that book. And that's why when I got a kick out of the idea of guerrilla gardening, because really it is just a lovely idea.
Well, I think it can help, you know, the way my books are framed is about taking some disorder and returning order. And so guerrilla gardening also does that. You know, if there's a neglected stop sign, go in, take out the weeds and put some nice plants around it. And it just returns order. And that's what the series is about. And Wreathing Havoc takes place around Thanksgiving, which isn't a huge gardening time here in Massachusetts. But I bring in some of the themes because she's also getting her gardens ready. And a lot of people I know have really interesting concoctions that they put in their gardens, including seaweed and, you know, saltay and all kinds of things over the winter. But there's a wreath competition at the library where they pick a book and they make a wreath. And there's also a garden sculpture where they take, you know, organic materials to make garden sculptures. So I wanted to take some of those fun and some of those community-based events and frame them around a story that's a good puzzle. And I'm really proud of Wreathing Havoc. I think I did that. It, you know, it also brings theater into the mix. And I worked in theater for over 30 years in management. So, you know, I have a strong love for that as well. But making sure that people understand that the guerrilla gardening goes on for these folks all year long is also a really fun part of writing these books and not neglecting a season. You know, I could have just jumped into this book and made it the next spring, but I thought, let's do some holiday stuff with gardening as well.
Well, and I think it's perfect because it has actually inspired me. I am going to make for this Thanksgiving. I'm going to surprise my brother and sister coming down from northern Michigan, and I am going to surprise them with a vegetable sculpture. I've decided I just have to do it because they are now organic farmers, which is very funny because they were both executives in major corporations. And about 15, 20 years ago, one time they were sort of meeting, just sort of passing each other by in an airport, and they looked at each other. They said, "Why are we doing this? You know, we don't spend any time together." And they decided to move back, because they were in Detroit at the time, and they decided to move back up to the farm and become organic farmers. Of course, my brother had not been back up to the farm for many years. The last time he was there, he was like 6 years old. And he thought it was all, you know, real easy to do farming. They quickly learned there's a lot to learn, right, about gardening, especially vegetable gardening. Yeah. But they accomplished it. They became really great organic gardeners, and they specialize in those little potatoes, you know, those little colored potatoes that they sell to Chicago restaurants. So,
good for them.
Those little purple and all of those different colored little potatoes. Wow, you know, those restaurants in all the fancy restaurants in Chicago love those potatoes. So they learned, and so they sort of got back to basics. And when I read this about I had not thought about making a sculpture, but that's going to be such a surprise. When I do it, I'm going to take a picture and put it on my website, because he's going to be surprised. But also the idea of the wreath contest, I thought that was also good. And that's something that many people could, you know, many groups and organizations, ladies groups, you know, book groups, they could do something like that, because we have to start doing things again as a community.
Yeah, in the book, it's a fundraiser for the library, because Lily's on the board of the library. And I love the idea of picking a title of a book and, you know, making a wreath that is based on or you know, calls back to that book. And I think I'm with you. I think as I'm getting ready to knit one of my nieces an afghan for Christmas, you know, we're doing those kinds of crafts and getting back to things like gardening, you know, like reading, like, you know, making wreaths, making garden sculptures, is just right now, I think it's a way to connect with a past, with history, and, you know, also just to create new traditions, which means so much. So I love that you're making a vegetable sculpture for Thanksgiving, and I wish you luck with that.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be cool. I'm designing it. You know, I'm sketching it out. And one of the other things I love about the series and the book, this book, of course, you're talking here about a little theater. In this case, the Goosebush Players. But I love little theater. And isn't it fun? Again, anybody who, once things pick up again and we can do things, if you haven't been involved in little theater, you should, because it is so much fun.
And there's a place for everyone, and that's why I love theater. You know, there's the big Broadway shows, and then there's the regional theaters, but community theaters and smaller theaters are of the community, and it's, you know, no matter what you do, you can get involved. There's something for you to do. It's a wonderful way to meet people, and just going to the shows and participating. And in the book, I talk about A Christmas Carol, which is my favorite story, and I just love the idea of commissioning playwrights to write new versions of A Christmas Carol. But, you know, also go see things you don't know or things that you're not familiar with. I'm a big believer in the power of theater and of everyone being together, either participating or as an audience, because the audience is very important in theater. But I'm with you. I think that small theaters are such an important part of so many communities and overlooked.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many things that you can do. Now, my boys were in little theater. They did all of these shows. They did Christmas Carol almost every year. They did Charlie Brown. They did all of them. You know, they were on, and of course I homeschooled them. That's why they had time to do this. So I, of course, was backstage all the time. I did all sorts of things backstage. I loved it. One time I made a 15-foot dragon that actually breathed fire out of papier-mâché, and that was for The Hobbit. You have so much fun in little theater, and everybody, as you said, there's a job for everybody. You don't have to have any particular talent. If you can just use a paintbrush, boy, that comes in handy for all the scenes that you know, scenery that you make, and this feeling of being together and producing something, and then bringing in this audience who also, and that's why I like little theater much better than big Broadway shows, because the little theater has heart and soul.
Yes.
And it's so exciting. And for years, as I said, we were doing that. My boys would be in all sorts of productions year after year. And then one time, the little theater here, which is a very, very fine place with excellent productions, and many of the actors are actually professionals, but they were doing Fiddler on the Roof, and my boys got into the Fiddler on the Roof, and they were very young still. My older one was one of the Russians and could dance, and both of my boys have beautiful singing voices. And I was watching, you know, the rehearsals, and then my husband would come and he'd watch the rehearsals. And at one point they said, you know, the man who was supposed to play the priest in the village, the one who wears this big tall hat, we need somebody else. He can't make it. And they looked at my husband, they said, "Do you want to play the priest?" My husband never been on stage in his life. But, you know, he was game. My husband's game for everything. And it was a part he could do. And so I'm watching for another week or so, the rehearsals, and I'm sitting in the audience. And, you know, and then at one point, they wanted another dancer. Oh, boy, I was ready. I was ready. I don't know how I got up on stage. But I'd been watching, and next thing I know, I was part of the chorus of The Fiddler on the Roof in a really serious production. And it was the... Uh-huh. I was so happy. I was like... actually, the director was not happy. I think he thought, this is crazy. She can't do it. But I went up there, and it was like one of those Broadway miracles. I knew that dance. I knew those songs. And I was the most enthusiastic villager you ever saw in The Fiddler on the Roof.
That's a great story. And, you know, it also speaks to the power of the show must go on. And I think that's one of the great things about theater is the show must go on. And so, you know, somebody can't show up anymore. We've got to figure something out. And that's why I think theater and your sons being involved in theater and you being involved in theater is such a gift, because even if you don't do it professionally later, you learn how to do things with other people, how to do things on budget, how to do things on time. And it's just wonderful skill sets from being involved in theater.
Exactly. Now, in this book, of course, it is a cozy mystery. So we need somebody has to die. My sister, who is, we call her in our area, we call her the connoisseur of cozy mysteries. And she always says to me, somebody's got to die. So,
right.
So tell us this particular plot of this one, because it's really good.
Well, the series starts, the book starts out, and they're going to Rian Tompkins' funeral, who was one of the, he owned a theater, and he was one of the Goosebush players, and so they're kind of sad. It looks like he died of a heart attack, so they're just moving forward. But the theater's been around for a long time. So 35 years ago, there were people involved who've now become movie stars. And one of the movie stars comes back for his funeral and then agrees to play Scrooge in their reading of A Christmas Carol. And he's a big personality. He's a real movie star. You know, he's got the charisma and the reputation. And his ex-wife, who he's friends with, but she's also part of the reading, and he goes and grabs a cupcake at the reception afterwards and eats it and keels over. And so they need to figure out, Lily needs to figure out, you know, why was he killed on purpose? Was there somebody else who was meant to get that cupcake? And, you know, does it have anything to do with Leon's death? And, you know, she starts digging up the past as well, and what happened 35 years ago, and why did he leave? And so I have both stories happening at the same time, you know, the present and also some stories about the past, and I try to weave them together as the story progresses.
And you do it beautifully. You really do. It's a great read. It's just lots of fun. And I think everyone will, you know, once they read the first one, if this is book four, if they read this, start with this one, they will go back to book one and start again, right from the beginning, because it's a great little series. We'll hope that it's going to be a long series, because one thing, of course, it is a Kensington book, and they have done the most beautiful covers, as they always do for all of their authors.
Yes. I love my covers. I'm so blessed with them. It's just beautiful. And they all have been just beautiful. They do a really good job.
They do. They are really excellent. And so we have this wonderful book. And do you want to explain who you are exactly? Because it's always difficult to explain. You have other names and other things, but where do people see you? What website do they go to? And what other books can they look forward to finding from you?
So my name, I write three different series. And so this is my most recent series, is Julia Henry, but they're all J.H. names. So J.A. Henricus wrote a series about an ex-cop who runs a theater company. And Julianne Holmes wrote a series about a clock shop owner in the Berkshires here in Massachusetts. And so I have a website, jhauthors.com. So oftentimes, Patsy, you probably talk to lots of people with this, we have different names because we have a different publisher or something else happens, and so we just create new names. And so I try to do two things. My name is Julie, so I try to get names that all sound like Julie, and then I figure use the same initials so that all my books are in the same vicinity in the bookstore, which is kind of fun. So Julia Henry is my most recent name, and as you said, the series is with Kensington, and I just couldn't be more thrilled.
Well, they've done a beautiful job, as they do for everybody. I have, of course, many Kensington authors on. Another one from Massachusetts is Carol J. Perry, who does the Witch City Mysteries. Yeah. And her covers are also just gorgeous.
Just gorgeous. And 'tis the season for her series, right? October, Salem, Massachusetts.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
she's doing a lot of, I know she's doing a lot of Zoom events and getting out there and talking about this wonderful series. She's now up to book 12. Well, it's book 12 is coming in next year. And finally, her main character, Lee Barrett, is getting married. And I've been reading that series since book one. And so we're excited. It took her 12 books to get the girl married. But, you know, that's part of the fun.
That is part of the fun. You don't want to get him married too early, because then what do you do? You know.
Exactly. But so is your little town, is it near Salem?
My little town is, Salem is on the North Shore. Mine's on the South Shore. Massachusetts isn't a huge state, but, you know, the difference between the two shores is there. So my town is based on a town I grew up in. So I grew up in a town called Duxbury. So I renamed it Goosebush. And, of course, I've changed the geography a little bit. But, you know, it's 2.5 hours away from Salem. You know, as I said, it's not a big place, but it's different. I mean, it's an interesting little state. We've got everything.
Well, you are a very colorful writer, if I may say, at this time of the year and at all other times of the year. You really make your little town come alive. It's a great series. And as a matter of fact, you do have a Halloween book. I think it was published last year. The other one, Digging Up the Remains, right?
Digging Up the Remains took place around Halloween, absolutely.
Yes, okay.
It's a great gardening time, yeah.
Exactly. Well, I just want to thank you so much, Julie. Julia, it's always confusing, but I'm just happy that you came on. I think that everybody, you can look up Julia Henry. It's, again, repeat the website.
JHAuthors.com, and I'm also on social media. I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter, and Instagram as JH Authors. So if you look at the Instagram or any of the social, you'll see a picture of me that my niece drew.
Yeah, I saw that. That's adorable.
White hair.
That's adorable. It's so cute. Well, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you. And just keep that little theater going, because that is lots of fun.
Thank you so much, Patsy. What a delight today's been.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
All right. She is so nice. And this book, I like this book so much. As I said, anything about gardening makes me excited. Let's play a book buzz. Devon Miller's book buzz. And then we have commercials and we'll come back. And I want to talk about Jim Lamb and his literary gems. We'll be back.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. September has come to an end, which means that the peak season for mangoes have come to an end for this year. And trust me when I say that our backyard has been loaded with them throughout the season. And due to all the mangoes that we would wake up to and see on the ground in our backyard, I couldn't help but to read the book Under the Mango Tree, written by Valdine Mark and illustrated by Sawyer Cloud. Inspired by the author Caribbean childhood, Under the Mango Tree introduces readers to V and Sanaa, two best friends who love to spend their days under the mango tree. However, the challenge of separation is faced when V moves away. Valdine Mark wrote this book to focus on the joy of friendship that's found in childhood. Becoming number one in children's Latin America fiction on the Amazon charts, this book is all about the power of friendship. I think you'll soon find me bringing some of my friends to read this book with me, Under the Mango Tree in our backyard. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Okay. Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And in a few minutes, I'm going to be playing another one of our literary gems that Jim Lamb is doing. And I really have to thank him so much. I've been getting so many nice messages from all of you since I've been giving out my email more often. It's patsy.radio@gmail.com. You can email me there and tell me what you think. But I really appreciate these comments about the literary gems that Jim Lamb is recording for us, because many of you are just starting your writing process. You've been thinking about it for years. During the pandemic-y time, you started maybe making notes and started writing, actually. And then sometimes you hesitate. You like worry, well, do I know enough? I don't know all these terms. I never learned I never studied writing. And that's what happens, unfortunately, in high schools today. They don't teach writing. So people are hesitant, and sometimes people are afraid to even, they don't know where to go for help. They're saying, well, I know I need to know things, but I don't know where to start. And this is a good way to start. Go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and I put up a webpage there for Jim Lamb and these literary gems. They're short, little, concise explanation of terms that you as a writer need to know. And once you know them, I mean, there's no mystery to them, but because you haven't ever been sort of encouraged, and very few high schools encourage really creative writing, it's always, you know, they make it for the special kids, the ones who, you know, have a, you know, 4.0 average or something. Those are the ones who are supposed to be writing. But that's not true, because it's funny, you learn so much from writing. You might not be the best student. You might not, your grammar today might not be the best. And your vocabulary might not be the best. And there's room for improvement. But that's what writing does. It gives you that opportunity to see what you don't know and what you want to know. And you don't have to worry about vocabulary, because the fact is, most books, what really the important words are the words that you speak every day. Now, of course, if you know, when you're thinking about grammar, your grammar for dialogue can be ungrammatical, because that's what we do. But then there's areas of your book where you want to be grammatical. But please, oh, please, really, I am tired of this. Don't get those grammar programs. They don't help you learn. Because the minute you... The grammar programs... Okay, I recently I'm getting really annoyed even with Word, because I write a word, a simple word, and the program comes up and says, do you really want to use that word? Yeah, I want to use that word. I don't want you asking me if I want to use that word. Because if I'm in writing about a character, if I'm writing a story, and that is the word that comes to my mind, I need to have that down on paper. I'm not talking about any, you know, negative words, but mean words. I'm just talking about simple words that they question. And you have to be able to analyze it yourself. You cannot, if we wanted books that were written by artificial intelligence, then all the books, all the writers could just give up and everything could be written by artificial intelligence. But believe me, there are, I can recognize it now. I'm getting so good at this that now, after like 10 pages, I recognize a pattern. The different grammar programs correct grammar in a different way. And they will recommend a, you know, a replacement word. They'll say, well, you don't want to use that word, why don't you try one, and they'll give you 1, 2, 3, 4 examples. And I discovered this, and this is funny. I discovered I'm reading books, you know, I get 4 to 5 books a day. I'm talking a lot of books. And I can read the first 10 pages, and I say, okay, I know somebody's used a grammar program. It's too perfect in an imperfect way. The grammar might be absolutely perfect, but they've used the same word. Three writers might use that same, the same exact word. You know, the grammar programs have a thesaurus that they pick a word and people will just follow along. They'll say, oh, well, the grammar program knows better than me. And they'll use, and I there are people out there who can identify this. And recently a writer did send me something, you know, that I, well, let's just say it was much better than anything that person had ever written before. And he was happy with it, but I also noticed that he had lost something. He had lost his sort of vim and vigor. He had toned it down. He had made it easier. Whereas before he would like throw out sentences and throw out words, but that's what made his writing interesting. And I'm really warning you not to do that. And you have an opportunity coming up here in November. We have NaNoWriMo, which is the month where you can write a novel. You need to write a 50,000 word novel in 1 month. And that is a good exercise for all of you. My goddaughter got me onto it. Kenesha is just a fabulous writer in and of herself. She can write stories and she's working on a novel. But when she did these NaNoWriMo events, 1 month to write 50,000 words, it can be done because you have to have some discipline, but you learn so much from it. And she convinced me a few years ago to do it, and I had never done that. So I did it, and I won. Everybody who finishes and gets to 50,000 is a winner. But what you want to do is then take that, later on, you take that 50,000 words that you've written, and now you've got something to work with. Because that's how you learn to get better. If you don't write the words yourself, if you are going to, you know, it's almost playing a joke on yourself. Don't play this joke on yourself that, oh, I'm going to, you know, let some program correct everything I do wrong, because you're not learning. You're not getting better. And there's no pride in it. You have to take pride in getting better. And writers get better and better. It's, a few times in my life I've known some writers who got worse, but that's because they of their own problems that they, you know, if you let's just put it this way, I know a writer who was really great, and then he started drinking, and then he wasn't so great. But other than that, writers generally get better. They start to understand the use of words. They understand how a few simple words, and they don't need a big vocabulary. You don't need a big vocabulary to write a great book. That's not the important thing. But what you need is just to understand and to have fun with words. If you have fun with words and play around with words, you might just be sitting in, you know, in Panera's. You're sitting there and just write down some words. Well, one of the best things to do there, I think Panera's is the greatest place. And, well, I don't know, now we don't sit quite as close to people, but to pick up dialogue, to understand, hear real dialogue, what real dialogue sounds like. But this is how you learn. And I just want to really encourage you. And I'm thank you for the notes I've been getting. And I'm looking forward. Some of you are really, you know, progressing in your writing. And I'm sure that, you know, in a year or so, depending on if you decide to self-publish or if you, you know, get a traditionally published, that some of you will be on Joy on Paper. And it will be because you listened to me and you started writing and you started just enjoying the process. Not all of you will, even if you finish a book, not all of you might publish a book, but you've accomplished something. That's why NaNoWriMo is so nice. You know that you've written a book, you finished a book. And if you can do that, well, you can do anything, you know, because that's darn hard. So I just want to go ahead now and play a literary gem from Jim Lamb. This is another thing that you should know about when you're writing your book.
Rocky Balboa versus Apollo Creed. Captain Ahab versus a great white whale. Montagues versus Capulets. Conflict, conflict, conflict. And where there's conflict, there's a story. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. If you're a storyteller, you know conflict is a part of life. Why? Because people will fight about anything. To be or not to be. To wear a mask or not. McDonald's or Burger King. Religion, politics, Coke, Pepsi. In The Wizard of Oz, it's Dorothy against the Wicked Witch in a jam-packed story that will knock your socks off. Or maybe just your shoes. In Stephen King's The Shining, the main character, played by Jack Nicholson, is in a battle with himself. That's when the real Johnny emerges. Speaking of Nicholson, consider his character in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was in conflict with Nurse Ratchet. Wouldn't mess with her. But conflict isn't just character A versus character B. Consider Hester Prynne in The Scarlet Letter. She faced off with her entire community. How about the main character in Shirley Jackson's The Lottery? She had a similar face-off with disastrous results. The Bible is full of conflicts. Cain versus Abel, Esau versus Jacob, Moses versus Pharaoh, David versus Goliath. And how about Tom Hanks in Castaway? He was practically the only character on screen, and he still had conflicts with nature. No wonder he was so upset when he lost his soccer ball. Wilson! Helen Hunt, Tom's love interest in Castaway, faced her own problems with storms in Twister. Scary stuff. The old man in The Old Man and the Sea battled sharks, fate, and inner doubt. Guess who won? And don't even get me started on man versus technology, like the HAL 9000 in 2001. Open the pod bay door, HAL. I can't do that, Dave. What about Mary Shelley's monster in Frankenstein? Wouldn't pick a fight with that guy, right? So if your story goes flat as a pancake, punch it back up by starting a fight. Maybe between your main character and a great white whale. A big storm, wicked witches, or renegade robots. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about conflict.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim, and everybody, I hope you're listening, and just keep writing. Now, somebody who is, she's always writing, is Rita Moreau. Of course, Rita Moreau does our book buzzes, and her first book in her new series, A Camper and, The Kooky Mystery Series, The Ghost and the Camper Mystery, Kooky Mystery Series, is just a wonderful book. It's so much fun. It's called Wheeler Dealer, and so this is her first book. Now, you know, it's always exciting when you have a new series, and she started this new series, came out with a wonderful idea. Two characters that are just fascinating. Mabel, who is retired and divorced, woman of a certain age who has decided to make her way across the country in a vintage camper and unexpectedly has a sidekick. A sort of ghostly version we don't know what exactly. Irma's a lot of things, and she wears a lot of different outfits, and she's lots of fun. And now you can get Wheeler Dealer in Audible version. And that's been released, and you can start with that one. That's book one in this wonderful mystery series. And the next one is Murder in the Badlands. Book three is going to be coming out. Whoa, this is, Rita is one of this success stories. she decided, you know, she retired and she decided to do something, fill her life with joy. And she started writing. First, she wrote one series. Then she came out with the idea for the second series, which is really brilliant. And she's developed it. And she's just growing and growing all the time. She's getting better and better. And that's what I say to all of you, that you start writing and you learn and you get better and you have fun and you become, you know, in your, just for your own self, you know, you see the change in your own attitude about yourself. You take pride in what you're doing. And I'm so thrilled, you know, with Rita's series. And of course, as I always also talk about, I mentioned earlier, Carol J. Perry and her Witch City mystery series. And now she has a second series. And this is, you know, this is what the joy of writing comes to a person. Once you start seeing, you know, seeing your books, I mean, this is so exciting. And I just cannot tell you how much I appreciate when you write to me and you say, yes, I'm getting inspired. I'm starting to think, yeah, I can do it. I can. I really can. And I know you can. And so keep in contact and keep those letters coming and the emails coming and telling me what you're doing. And if I can, you know, encourage you in any way, just let me know. Because once you have that first draft and then you start editing and you start doing all of the things that go along with becoming a real author and seeing your books published, wow, it's exciting. It's exciting for you, for your family and your friends, and to know that what you've written will be there forever. People will be reading it a long time after you're gone. And that's the fun thing about writing, to know that it's there and that you've created something. Because remember what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And if you're very lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I'm hoping for Carol J. Perry. And of course, we're looking forward to Jack Reacher. My goodness, Lee Child and his brother, Andrew Child, are going to be here on October 28th to talk about the new Reacher book. And we'll get to hear some inside information because I heard that Lee Child went and watched the filming of the new Jack Reacher streaming video series. That is going to be exciting, and I am looking forward to that. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed. Thank you, Big Ed. It was wonderful when you joined in the conversation with Go EHS, because my listeners like to hear. I always get do you realize, Ed, I get an email from people and say, oh, why don't you let him talk more? He should talk more. Anyway, and he saluted me, and thank you very much, everybody. Bye-bye. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm saluting him because I want to be a general. Oh, I need to be a general. Bye-bye now.